في الذين انضموا للاستماع إلى راديو بلدي أو الراديو عربي أمريكي ويعنى بقضايا الهرب في المهجر. برامجنا في راديو بلدي كل يوم جمعة من 8 وحتى 9 صباحا في بث حي ومباشر عبر WNZK Radio 690 AM. صباح الخير بلدي، صباح الخير لكل مستمعينا.
Welcome to Radio Baladi, the first Arab, Middle Eastern, and American simulcast radio show. Radio Baladi is broadcast every Friday morning on WNZK 690 AM from 8 until 9 Eastern Time on Good Morning Michigan. Our call-in number 248-557-3300. And now, stay tuned for the best radio talk show on Arab and American issues.
I am Atif Abdel Jawad. Join me the first Friday of each month at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. I will be discussing some of the most important issues and events in the Middle East live on America's Voice of the Arabs. WNZK 690 AM and WDMV 700 AM.
Good day, everybody. U.S. criticism of Israel for its conduct in Gaza comes only in words with no real action. While the U.S. is turning Russia into the most sanctioned country in the world, it has so far imposed sanctions on only three Israeli settlers. The U.S. has also shielded Israel from international censure by blocking ceasefire resolutions at the UN Security Council, even as the death toll in Gaza reportedly nears 30,000. Now that Israel plans to partition and control Gaza for what it calls security purposes, will the U.S. continue its symbolic criticism without real actions? To discuss this and other related issues, we have with us a group of distinguished guests and experts. Mr. Saeed Ariqat, a longtime Washington-based Palestinian-American journalist, Ahmad Hamad, director of the American Human Rights Council, and Professor Brad Roth at the Wayne State University. Now, I am not sure if Mr. Hamad is with us right now or not, but before we get started, I want to tell you about a program note. And that is, we are not coming to you just on radio, but also by video. If you go to the Facebook page of the U.S. Arab Radio, you can see us on a video link there provided by Zoom. I would like to start with a question for all my guests and experts. And that is the reaction or interpretation of each of my guests to the primary results in the state of Michigan. Now, the Democratic primary, obviously. As we know, there are more Democratic voters, I think, casted their vote in the form of uncommitted. And their number in the state of Michigan came close to more than 100,000 voters. So I want to get your reaction and your interpretation of that. Let's start with Ahmad Hamad. He is with us now. If not, we'll go to Professor Roth. Do we have Mr. Hamad with us now, or will he join us later? Okay, Professor Roth, your reaction and interpretation.
Well, I think that the turnout for the uncommitted was quite impressive under these circumstances. It was only 13% of the vote statewide. But as you say, 100,000 votes. And considering how close the contests typically are in the state of Michigan for the presidency, 100,000 votes represents a number that the Biden administration cannot ignore. On the other hand, the difficulty is that polls apparently show that Democratic voters on the whole continue to support the Biden administration's approach to this situation. So there's less pressure on the Biden administration than might be imagined. But I do think that there's something pivotal about the possibility that people who would ordinarily be expected to come out for Biden might stay home, and it might be the margin of defeat in this upcoming election. That's a very dangerous fire to be playing with, because the alternative to Joe Biden would be something much worse for Palestinians than for many others. But it does represent a point of leverage in the first instance.
Yes, you are right. I mean, in 2016, we understand that Mr. Trump won Michigan by 11,000 votes only. So the margin was very tight here. So we are talking this time about 100,000 votes that were uncommitted. Mr. Arakat, you are not from Michigan, but I'm sure you can tell us something about your reaction.
Yes, good morning to everyone. Thank you for having me. For sure, I mean, as you mentioned and as Brad mentioned, it really is a wake-up call. It should be a wake-up call for the Democrats and for this president in particular. And as I said, Joad, 11,000 votes made a difference in 2016. So it is not something that you can dismiss. It is not something that you can say, well, come November, things will be different. People will have forgotten. People would have softened their positions and so on. The fact that it was a low turnout to begin with, and when you have 100,000 votes cast, as you said, for uncommitted or non-committed, whatever, it could make the difference. It could mean the difference between going back to the White House or not. Now, I think that the Arab voter in the United States of America feels alienated, feels isolated. It's a big chunk. It is growing every day. If you add that to Muslim voters, then the problem becomes bigger. Then the real problem is the progressive voters, the 30 and below, people of color, Hispanics, Black Lives Matter, and so on. So you add all this, and you're going to have a huge obstacle to overcome on November 5th of this year. So it is something that they ought to consider. The Biden administration that has, callously almost dismissed the Arab vote, dismissed Arab sentiment, and continues full steam ahead, aiding a genocidal war. I mean, there is no other way to describe what's going on. We will see probably for the first time that foreign policy issue, a dynamic as the one that we see now, basically be a determinant factor or a major part of a determinant factor in the outcome of the election.
Mr. Saeed Arakat, does it say anything about a growing influence or power for Arab Americans generally in the U.S.?
Yes, indeed. And, it is, we have, and it's a generational thing. I mean, I remember when I was a student and so on, and I worked with communities, we tried to work with the progressive and sometimes these groups that were really fringe groups and so on the left. What you see now is really mainstream connections between Arab voters and non-Arab voters. They have a great deal in common in terms of what to vote for and what to vote on and so on. There is a great deal of connectivity between these groups. It used to be that, you can be progressive except for Palestine, not anymore. because if you are, then you are a disingenuous progressive. And that is really being, you know, sort of being honed, being shaved, and it's going to impact all aspects of the electoral process in America, in the small towns, in the big towns, in the big states, in the, you know, key states, whatever. You will see a great deal of activism over the next few months and few years that will definitely impact the electoral process.
Professor Roth, but the vote of the Arab Americans in Michigan carries a dilemma for the community. They don't want to vote for, they don't want to see Mr. Trump win the presidency. As we remember, or they remember, that Mr. Trump banned travelers to the U.S. from 7 or 6 Muslim countries, and he also handed Jerusalem over to Israel with no return. So their grievances against Mr. Trump would certainly make them, at least by a ratio of 70%, voting for Mr. Biden. But now they don't want even to vote for Mr. Biden. So this is a dilemma. How do you look at that dilemma?
And I would certainly urge all voters to come out and vote to stop Donald Trump from becoming president again. I think a second Trump presidency would be far worse than the first one. The first Trump presidency was, to a certain extent, constrained by more regular Republican figures and policy people who were situated in positions in the Trump administration that represented a kind of constraint upon him, because Trump's own people didn't really know the first thing about how to manage any kind of government bureaucracy. I think that in some sense the Trump people have gotten the hang of it, and a second administration would be much more divisive and much more destructive, both at home and abroad, and particularly, I think, in terms of the kind of attitudes being brought to bear on the Arab world. I do think that on the one hand, I would advise everyone to come out and vote against Donald Trump. But on the other hand, the reality of it is that people are not going to be as enthusiastic to come out to the polls. And even if, as Mr. Arakat pointed out, you lose a tenth of that 100,000, then this is going to be a very serious problem. Another thing to note is the extent to which members of the Jewish community have stepped forward in this regard. Andy Levin, a former congressman, was one of the sponsors of the uncommitted vote. I was just at an event dominated by Jewish community members the other night. Many people are very concerned about these issues, and Jewish Voice for Peace has become a much more prominent voice within the Jewish community in the time since October 7th. So I think that people are starting to understand that there is not a monolithic Jewish community in support of these kinds of policies. And that, I think, in turn will encourage other people to raise their voices without such fear of being accused of bigotry.
Mr. Arakat, can we imagine a repeat scenario among Arab American voters in other states like California, New Jersey, or even New York?
Well, we can. I mean, you know, it's. I know I have a large family, let's say, in California, and they are embittered. They are lifelong Democrats. They contribute to the Democratic Party. They have always been, and they are really disheartened. I mean, they are. They will not vote for Biden under any circumstances. That's what they say now. You know, we don't know how things pan out in November, but that's what they say now. Now, in California or my state of Maryland or in New Jersey, I think the Democrats have a comfortable situation. They are more than likely win, so that is not going to make a great deal of difference. But in the battleground states, it will make a lot of difference, and especially Michigan. And that's really what they need to focus on. In the long term, the Arab community, let's say in a place like California, which is really it's a middle class community. Many of them are upper middle class and so on. They might say, well, you know what? We have been Democrats all of our lives. Maybe we ought to try the other side of the streets and so on. You know, so it may have an impact in that way. You know, looking in the long term, I don't see it happening because the younger generation is definitely far more progressive and lefty and liberal. So they will probably stick to the Democratic Party. But it's a fear that, you know, ought to be addressed. You know, what we have seen is basically this dismissive attitude by the Biden administration. I mean, they finally sent in Ro Khanna, Representative Ro Khanna to Michigan a couple of weeks ago and so on to speak to the community that is really embittered. But by and large, since the election of this president, we have not seen the Biden administration pay any attention whatsoever to the Arab border. And that is dangerous because Arab borders is not just in a sphere by itself. It works with other groups. It works with coalitions. It works with other solidarity movements and so on. And naturally, they fall into the right of, let's say, minorities, Black voters, Hispanic voters, women's movement, all that stuff. All that will have an impact on the Democrats and the future.
When we come back after the break, I'm going to ask Professor Ross to talk to us about the Jewish vote. You said it's not monolithic. So I want to discuss who would vote for Trump, who would vote for Biden, but after we come back from the break.
Ziad Brand. Quality products from our family to yours. Ziad Brothers Importing offers the finest quality products, including brands like Sultan, Kraft, Nestle, Hook, Rico Picon, Donna, and many more. Ask your retailer to carry these fine products because you deserve the very best. For more information, visit our website at www.ziad.com. That's www.ziad.com. Ziad. Quality products from our family to yours.
Life for Relief and Development has now been rated as one of the best charities for humanitarian aid. Life's humanitarian projects span the globe, and Life is celebrating its 30th anniversary of providing essential life-saving aid to people and communities in 36 countries, regardless of race, color, religion, or cultural background. Where there is life, there is hope. And when disaster occurs here or around the world, including being one of the first responders to the Turkey-Syria earthquake crisis, Life for Relief and Development rushes in to provide food, medical aid, and shelter to those in need. We are looking to help the earthquake victims, and we take 0% overhead on emergency donations. So please help improve these efforts. Learn more about our involvement to help the helpless and bring hope where it's needed most. And make your tax-deductible donation to Life for Relief and Development now at lifeusa.org or call 248-424-7493. That's 248-424-7493. Get ready for an amazing experience at Ishtar Restaurant on 15 Mile Road in Sterling Heights. Enjoy excellent hospitality from owners Ali Abagdadi and Fatty Bottom, serving the best in Mediterranean food. Try Chef Ali Abagdadi's famous shawarma, the best Iraqi grills and food, and the best Arabic and international dishes. Dine in our authentic atmosphere or take out. Call 586-698-2585 or check us out on Facebook. Ishtar Restaurant practices all CDC guidelines and is open every day 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Have an amazing experience today at Ishtar Restaurant, 3625 15 Mile Road, Sterling Heights.
I am Atif Abdeljawad. Join me the first Friday of each month at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. I will be discussing some of the most important issues and events in the Middle East live on America's Voice of the Arabs. WNZK 690 AM and WDMV 700 AM.
Welcome back to Radio Baladi. We are discussing the situation in Gaza, the war there between Hamas and Israel, and the American support for Israel. Professor Ross, you said a minute ago that the Jewish vote is not, or the Jewish community is not a monolithic bloc. So who would vote for Mr. Biden? Who would vote for Mr. Trump, and why?
Well, there's only a very small part of the Jewish community that votes for, for Trump. And it is concentrated, I think, largely in highly Orthodox communities and people who are oriented toward the right politically. And they're not going to be very much in play in this question. They're going to support Trump regardless. But that's a very small part of the Jewish vote. Overwhelmingly, the Jewish community supports the Democrats and supports Biden. But what's interesting is to see, for example, in younger voters, ages 18 to 35, it turns out that support for Biden's policy is barely over 50%. And that's dramatically different from other parts of the population, both Jewish and non-Jewish. So I think that you see that on the one hand. You also see in terms of people who have some level of voice and influence beyond the numbers of the Jewish population in the electorate, people who are visibly Jewish, who speak to these questions in ways that are far more complicated than the way in which the leading organizations associated with the Jewish community would speak of them, and are strong advocates for ceasefire, strong advocates for a change in policy. And that, as I say, has created, I think, a dynamic in which many more people are willing to raise their voices without fearing being tarred as anti-Semites, because so many prominent Jewish intellectuals and others have spoken up on this issue.
It's ironic because I understand that Israel at one point created Hamas under Sheikh Yassin in the 60s and 70s, I believe. And the purpose was to use Hamas as a tool to pressure Yasser Arafat and his organization, Fatah organization. So is Israel paying an unwanted price right now for its own action?
Is that to me?
Great many respects, yes.
Well, for both of you, but let's go with Professor Roth first.
Yeah. No, I think that this has been a long, long train of events of the same sort over the whole period of time that I've been watching it since the early 1980s. The idea has always been that we could somehow divide the Palestinians. First, there was the idea of the village leagues that were sponsored by the Begin government way back when that idea collapsed. There were, of course, the efforts to try to divide Palestinians by providing support for Hamas against the PLO. The notion always was somehow that if you had a weak party on the other side, that you were at an advantage. This turned out to be incredibly foolish, because if the political forces of the community that you need to negotiate with are incapable of maintaining the unity of that community, then there's nothing you can get by way of negotiation with people who purport to represent that community who have no support on the ground. And so the Israeli policy over time has been to basically try to demoralize the Palestinians, to try to lead the Palestinians to think that they have no alternative but to capitulate. And of course, the exact opposite has been the outcome, that they have alienated people to the point where instrumental rationality no longer governs people's attitude toward all of this. People want to strike back. And that, of course, just furthers a negative dynamic and is incredibly dangerous to Jewish life, to the state of Israel, and to all of the objectives that that people are, you know, whether good or bad, all of the objectives that people are trying to accomplish on the Israeli side.
Mr. Arakat, the same question, but with just one amendment. Now, Mr. Netanyahu is seeking to weaken the Palestinian Authority. In the past, he wanted to help Hamas, and now he's fighting Hamas. But so is Israel paying the price of its misguided policy now?
Well, I mean, Israel, whether it's Netanyahu or the others, even beginning with as far back as Rabin, you know, I mean, I don't want to delve in all the details, but they have done everything possible to discredit the Palestinian Authority and the PLO and so on. So that is a long history, and I agree with what Brad said a great deal. Now, to say that Israel created Hamas and so on, this is really, it's something that is being used these days to discredit Hamas. It's not true at all. Israel may have facilitated Hamas as a sports club back in the 70s and so on, their movement. Israel has always been, you know, just happy to do, as any colonial movement, to divide and conquer. I mean, that's the premise of their function in any occupied territory. This happened by the British, happened by the French, happened, and certainly happened by the Israelis. The truth of the matter is that it is the occupation that creates all these movements. The occupation that created Hamas. I mean, Hamas came into being in 1987 with the Intifada as a political force, as a political party. And it has always been, you know, unlike what they try to label it with, it has always been a movement focused on fighting the occupation, nothing else. Hamas has never conducted any military operations outside historic Palestine. It has never done things like, let's say, like the PFLP, for instance, or Fatah, for instance, or Black September, and so on. Quite the contrary. It was always focused on fighting the Israeli, nothing else. And they have done this, you know, all along. They tried to work within the mainstream, the Palestinian mainstream, and they were basically shunned a great deal at the behest of the United States of America and so on. And the Palestinians were sort of forced into a corner of elections and so on. And Hamas won because people had just had it with the corruption of the PLO and the corruption of the PA. So a lot of elements have basically brought us to where we are today. And a few weeks back, like 3 or 4, maybe 5 weeks ago, they issued a manifesto and they say we are a national liberation movement. And that's really what they are. You know, they are fighting the Israeli occupiers. They've never showed any kind of aspiration to say that Netanyahu somehow supported Hamas. It's nonsense. It is something to discredit Hamas, to say that Hamas is not a genuine national liberation movement, which in fact it is. Every aspect shows that they are, and they have been ever since they came into being back in 1987.
Okay, we'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Mr. Ahmad Hamad. So we'll see you again in a few seconds.
At Top Rehab Physical Therapy Clinic in Dearborn, we provide effective physical therapy sessions in order to limit pain and discomfort. Top Rehab provides physical therapy care for any diagnosis prescribed by a physician, and we regularly see and treat conditions such as stroke, TMJ, fibromyalgia, sciatica, joint pain, and more. We use a variety of pain management methods, including modalities, soft tissue mobilization, and therapeutic exercise. If you're in need of physical rehabilitation or physical therapy, get the highest quality health care at Top Rehab. Most insurance is accepted, and we're open Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 8 to 6, Tuesday and Thursday, 8 to 5, and Saturday, 10 till 2. Call for an appointment today at 313-846-0555. That's 313-846-0555. Choose Top Rehab Physical Therapy Clinic on Michigan Avenue in Dearborn. Life's too short to be in pain. With more than 30,000 successful in vitro fertilizations, IVF Michigan is now ranked as one of America's best fertility clinics, according to Newsweek magazine. IVF Michigan fertility centers are the recognized leaders in high-quality fertility care. With locations in Bloomfield Hills and 9 other cities in Michigan and Ohio, IVF has experts in all aspects of the field. A founding member, American Board Certified Dr. Nicholas Shama, is one of the leading reproductive endocrinologists in Michigan and Ohio. He has performed over 20,000 successful IVF cases and it's helped thousands of couples fulfill their dreams of parenthood. When it's time to get personalized care from Dr. Nicholas Shama at one of America's best fertility clinics, call IVF Michigan Fertility Centers in Michigan and Ohio toll-free at 855-952-9600. 855-952-9600.
Are you going to start a restaurant or a grocery store soon? Do you need floor plans and designs? Call Najee Abood at 734-744-9796. Do you want to buy kitchen and restaurant equipment at discount prices? Call Najee Abood now, 734-744-9796. New concept products and design, the trademark of kitchen equipment. 5% discount on all purchases of $75,000 or more. New concept products and design, new location, 31185 Schoolcraft in Livonia. Learn more at www.newconceptproducts.com. Call Najee Abood, 734-744-9796.
I am Atif Abdeljawad. Join me the first Friday of each month at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. I will be discussing some of the most important issues and events in the Middle East live on America's Voice of the Arabs. WNZK 690 AM and WDMV 700 AM.
Welcome back to Radio Baladi. We are discussing the U.S. position toward the war in Gaza, and we are joined now by Mr. Imad Hamad. And Mr. Hamad, I want to ask you the question that I started this edition of the program with, and I want to know your reaction and or interpretation of the Democratic primary results in the state of Michigan. Go ahead.
Well, indeed, it was a historical effort and a clear, loud message to Biden administration and the Biden campaign that the community at large and its allies stand firm that President Biden is to be held accountable for his ongoing unconditional support to the genocidal war against the occupied Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank. I think numbers speak loud. I think both on the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. So when people voted uncommitted, that means that they are serious about their position, firm about position, their position. And at this point of time, we see, or the community at large, see no redemption. I think at this point, with the high number of casualties and high number of people who's been murdered, on daily basis, by the minute, by the hour. We all witnessed the yesterday massacre, and yet we also witnessed the United States keep vetoing any effort to try to endorse the labor of a ceasefire. Like yesterday, the Security Council wanted just to condemn and do something about the massacre where the Israeli army forces killed and murdered people who are starving and trying to get some aid. And yet the only country in the world, the United States of America, stands against it and block it. So I think numbers spoke, made the statement. I think the community at large is more determined and getting ready for the November election. The community is determined to make the presidency of President Biden, a one-term president of the United States, so he can be an example to others.
Now, Mr. Hamad, we are talking about still about a minority in the state of Michigan. What about the influence or the effect of the larger Arab community throughout the U.S.?
Well, I think the community at large in Michigan and across the United States are on the same page. I think we never seen such a stance of unity more than what we've seen in these primaries. I think the position is clear. Clearly, Michigan is one of the most important swing states that the Biden administration and the Biden campaign strive to win, and without it, they may lose. So I think that the community at large stand by the same position that no re-election for President Biden. Now, that doesn't mean that there may be some segments within the community who are Democrats, the same way that many are Republicans. They may try to deviate from this position. But overall, I would say the community in Michigan made its statement loud and clear. And I think no recourse for that.
But help me resolve this dilemma. The Arab American community, whether in Michigan or elsewhere, I don't think they want to see Mr. Trump again for obvious reasons, for what he did to them and to their fellow Muslims and Arabs while he was in power. But they are also boycotting the vote for Mr. Biden. So how can we resolve that?
Well, first, it's the same when we talk about the current genocidal war. The first thing that many come to ask, what about October 7th? And that's the same, like when we talk about the elections, they come and say, what about former President Trump? Is that this is a fierce tactic that they've been using. It's not going to work. And I think it's not a matter of who's better or who's worse. Nobody is naive here. We understand that both Democrats and Republicans, they compete who could be more of support to Israel. There is no doubt about this. The question here, we are witnessing unprecedented genocide that been taking place. And President Biden himself and his administration are fully responsible, fully complicit with this war against Palestinians. Now, if you look at the numbers of the latest primary elections, you see over 100,000 people voted uncommitted as Democrats. On the same token, there are 3%, over 33,000 voters voted as Republicans and as uncommitted. And I tell you, many people, even though despite all odds, did vote for former President Trump. As they say, you know, the presidency of former President Trump was bad for America, was bad for the whole world, wasn't just bad for Arab Americans and Muslim Americans. And if that's the case, let it be, because the suffering of the of our people in Gaza and the West Bank and what they are facing on a daily basis doesn't equate one day of it. So it's not going to scare us. It's not going to make us fear and be afraid of the choice that we are to make. If the voters chose former President Trump, let it be. Somebody needs to be held responsible for this genocide. And we understand that many fellow Americans do see it the same way we see it, and no difference about it. It's about the moral compass, the compass of morality that the United States lost at the time of President Biden. So that's not going to change anything in the book. But I can tell you, many people care less, and they may vote even for former President Trump. Let it be.
Okay. Well, Mr. Hamad, I hope you will stay with us. But now I want to ask Professor Roth. Thomas Friedman of the New York Times writes, if Mr. Biden is not careful, America's global standing will plummet right along with Israel's. My question is, how it would plummet, what shape, what form, and how to avoid that?
I think that in terms of the United States' relationship with its core allies, there probably isn't much to worry about on that front for the Biden administration. But I think what it does need to worry about is how it affects, how relations are affected with other parts of the world, particularly throughout the global South. When you have key figures in the global South, like President Lula da Silva of Brazil coming out so strongly on these questions, when you have South Africa going to the International Court of Justice, getting the International Court of Justice to take seriously the question of genocide, even though there's no finding of genocide, I think there will be no ultimate finding of genocide, but it puts genocide into the conversation. And it makes it then, it emboldens other people to start speaking in these terms. We also have a parallel event in the International Court of Justice where there's been an application from some time back now being heard on an advisory opinion that would deal with the deprivation of Palestinian self-determination in the territories and where the issue of apartheid is going to loom large. And a number of leading human rights organizations, including Israeli human rights organizations, have used the term apartheid. Apartheid is understood to be an international crime. Complicity with apartheid is also potentially criminal. And so you have a kind of background discourse about all of this that's extraordinarily unfavorable to the role that the United States seeks to take in the world, particularly at this moment where it tries to divide the world into authoritarianism and democracy, tries to be the pillar of morality in the face of Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping, and yet it is bogged down by its complicity with events that are very widely seen, especially in the global South, as being criminal. So I think this is a real problem for the Biden administration. Whether it will cause it to change course at all remains to be seen.
Mr. Arakat, given the fact that the international community has a short memory, is Mr. Friedman in his article exaggerating when he says America's standing, global standing, will plummet together along with Israel's?
I don't want to agree or disagree with Thomas Friedman. I don't really hold him in any kind of esteem. But I will tell you this. I think that the United States is isolated. I mean, look what happened yesterday at the Security Council, which Ahmed brought up. 14 countries voted to condemn a criminal act. That is, the whole world sees it as a criminal act. And the United States said, no, it's not a criminal act. We want to see all the facts, before we could do this. I asked this to the State Department spokesman yesterday, and we went on back and forth and so on. It is disingenuous. It is, it is criminal. I mean, the whole world out there is beginning to see Israel as a gangster state. It is behaving in a very gangsterish kind of way. These soldiers are not soldiers. They're perceived as gangsters in uniform. They go into the homes, steal stuff, kill people, blow things up. And then they showed it proudly on TikTok and so on. They send it to their girlfriends and all these things. So that's what America is. It is isolated. I'm no polling expert. But if we were probably to take a survey, we will find that Netanyahu and Biden are probably the most hated leaders in the world. So to say, Biden can rest assured among his client states and so on. Yeah, I mean, America can rest assured with its client states, including European states. But for sure, as Brad said, the global South, You know, the so-called third world, the countries in South America, everywhere, you know, they just had it with this, you know, I mean, total support to a massacre that is ongoing, that is ongoing. I mean, we see it right before our eyes. So to say that, you know, America is falling into the gutter, that Israel is dragging it into the gutter, that is true. That is true. Because, you know, I mean, look at what we see in America. We just most recently saw the most extreme acts of protest. You know, a member, an active member of the American Armed Forces immolated himself in front of the Israeli embassy. I mean, that's as disgusted with what America is doing as anything can be, or that's the most disgusted form of expression. So I think America is losing its influence, you know, for a number of reasons, of course, but it is losing its influence. It is no longer, it can no longer claim to hold the moral value. You know, how could it talk about, you know, what happens in Ukraine and then in the same statement, turn around and do say exactly the opposite about what Israel is doing? So who's going to take them seriously? I think, you know, America today has lost its moral standing. Not because of this war, but, you know, things are accumulating and so on, but largely because of this war. I mean, you know, you go, you listen to Kirby, you listen to Miller, you listen, and I do, as a journalist, I go to these places and so on. And you feel that, you know, the whole room, almost everybody, all the journalists, they feel the disgust, to be quite honest, with what they say. Because, you know, when you sit and say and you see what the Israelis are doing, all the facts are there. They're shooting people. They're going over them with tanks and so on. And you say, we want to wait for the fact. What fact? The facts speak for themselves.
When we come back from the break, I have a question for Mr. Ahmad Hamad about the cost. Who is going to pay for the expenses of Israel's plans in Gaza after the war? When we get back from the break.
When you're looking for the best in optical care, Dr. Imad Nakash is your doctor to see. With years of experience and thousands of successful procedures performed, you can trust your eyes to Dr. Imad Nakash. See Dr. Imad Nakash and his professional staff for your eye care needs. There's two locations to serve you. In Hazel Park, call 248-336-3937. 248-336-3937. In Rochester Hills, call 248-299-3937. That's 248-299-3937. 299-3937.
Life for Relief and Development has now been rated as one of the best charities for humanitarian aid. Life's humanitarian projects span the globe, and Life is celebrating its 30th anniversary of providing essential life-saving aid to people and communities in 36 countries, regardless of race, color, religion, or cultural background. Where there is life, there is hope. And when disaster occurs here or around the world, including being one of the first responders to the Turkey-Syria earthquake crisis, Life for Relief and Development rushes in to provide food, medical aid, and shelter to those in need. We are looking to help the earthquake victims, and we take 0% overhead on emergency donations. So please help improve these efforts. Learn more about our involvement to help the helpless and bring hope where it's needed most. And make your tax-deductible donation to Life for Relief and Development now at lifeusa.org or call 248-424-7493. That's 248-424-7493. At Top Rehab Physical Therapy Clinic in Dearborn, we provide effective physical therapy sessions in order to limit pain and discomfort. Top Rehab provides physical therapy care for any diagnosis prescribed by a physician, and we regularly see and treat conditions such as stroke, TMJ, fibromyalgia, sciatica, joint pain, and more. We use a variety of pain management methods, including modalities, soft tissue mobilization, and therapeutic exercise. If you're in need of physical rehabilitation or physical therapy, get the highest quality health care at Top Rehab. Most insurance is accepted, and we're open Monday, Wednesday, and Friday 8 to 6, Tuesday and Thursday 8 to 5, and Saturday 10 till 2. Call for an appointment today at 313-846-0555. That's 313-846-0555. Choose Top Rehab Physical Therapy Clinic on Michigan Avenue in Dearborn. Life's too short to be in pain.
This is Dr. Sahar Kamiz. Welcome to my
I am Atif Abdeljawad. Join me the first Friday of each month at 8 a.m. Eastern Time. I will be discussing some of the most important issues and events in the Middle East live on America's Voice of the Arabs. WNZK 690 AM and WDMV 700 AM.
Welcome back to Radio Baladi. We are discussing the situation in Gaza, and Mr. Imad Hamad, the demilitarized Gaza in which Israel is in control of security with UNRWA disbanded. And of course, there is cost involved here, reconstruction, healthcare costs, education, since Israel will be in charge. Who's going to pay for all that?
Well, first, I think Dr. Arakat laid out the reality of the political hypocrisy that we never witness through long years. I understand the notion of double standards. I understand the notion of alliances, etc. But we are dealing with unprecedented state of political hypocrisy that is championed by the United States, unfortunately. I think, you know, talking about reconstruction and what have you aftermath this genocide is something I feel so sad even to entertain. I feel so sad to talk about. I think what we are facing now is more pressing and more important for the world to do something before talking about a more of a destruction and doubling, if not tripling, the number of those who've been murdered by the Israeli defense forces. I myself have difficulty to talk about. I understand that Israel intentionally want to target the UNRWA because it's not about being permitted to provide aid to Palestinian refugees or not. I think it's a political entity that is a living witness why the UNRWA was founded, why the UNRWA was existed. It's attestation to the root of the problem here is the Israeli occupation, the illegal Israeli occupation of the Palestinian land. And that's why no surprise that the Israeli far wing government is saying that we don't want UNRWA here, we want other agencies. So it's a political statement that is very consistent to eliminate anything that gives hope for Palestinian that they may acquire their basic human rights of statehood and self-determination. Reconstruction, I think the whole world now stands ready to provide basic humanitarian aid, where Israel weaponized medicine, food, power, everything in the book. And then we come to wonder, what is the definition of genocide here? No, it's not genocide. What? It's massive killing. It's mass killing. It's what then? When it comes to the Palestinian, is one standard. When it comes to Israel, is one standard. And when it comes to the world, is a different standard. Definitely, the whole world is a political interest and a political challenge that the world are to face. I'm not worried about the reconstruction. I'm worried about those who are being killed up till today, over 30,000 and more under the rubble, and those who are have no hope whatsoever. That's my important challenge, and that's the challenge before the world to deal with, before they talking about reconstruction. I talk about reconstruction after a week, after a month, after a year, and how many people get to die and get to be killed until the world start talking about it, or until for our government here, our administration, the United States, to wake up and smell the coffee and do something of moral sense and talk about reconstruction. Is this going to redeem the war crimes? Is this going to redeem the genocide that's been taking place against Palestinians?
Professor Roth, why can't President Biden help reform the Palestinian Authority while deploying UN peacekeeping troops in Gaza so that the Palestinian Authority can rule in both the West Bank and Gaza. After all, that's Mr. Biden's idea.
It's really simply a question of the politics of the matter at this point, and the Biden administration is not willing to absorb what it perceives to be the political cost of defying the Israeli government to that extent. There is substantial division within the Israeli political community, and the Prime Minister of Israel at this point is extraordinarily weak politically, which in fact exacerbates the situation because it provides him with incentives to continue to prolong this agony. But I think at the end of the day, the Biden administration is going to have to deal with an Israeli government one way or other, which is hostile to the idea of this, the kind of solution that you suggest. And at this point, the political calculus has not favored that sort of outcome, unfortunately.
Mr. Arakat, is Mr. Netanyahu acting the way he does, and his motivation is his personal interest?
Well, for sure, Mr. Netanyahu is probably one of the most conniving people in modern history. He's quite a political operative. He wants to stay in power. He knows the moment he's out of power, he will more than likely go to prison. So, yes, he has a vested interest in continuing this war. But he also sees that this is an opportunity from their point of view. It's a twisted, sick opportunity to liquidate the Palestinian issue. And he can see they are doing this, yet the world is unable to change anything. There's been no movement in the Arab world. They're totally paralyzed. The United States of America is 100% on his side. I mean, you know, it is really amazing that we have to ask ourselves, you know, how would people feel about a country starving you, your children, stopping food at the border, bombing the food airdrop to bypass the blockade, and then shooting people that make it to the aid and really get away with it? So that's what Netanyahu sees. He feels invulnerable, you know, and unfortunately, I mean, we don't see Israeli society upset or, you know, feeling that, you know, this should not be happening in my name. And I saw a survey yesterday where more than two-thirds of Israelis actually support blockading any food from going to Gaza or medicine and so on. We see people go and demonstrate to prevent the food trucks from going in. I mean, when we see the United States really just saying, oh, well, you know, what can we do? They can do plenty. They can say that some senators suggested yesterday to send a hospital ship, for instance, show a gesture, do airdrops. I mean, we saw the Jordanian.
Mr. Arakat, I'm sorry, I have to interrupt you. We are running out of time.
But last
Mr. Saeed Arakat, thank you very much. I'm running out of time.
Okay.
My thanks also go to Professor Roth and Mr. Ahmad Hamad. And I will be back the first Friday next month. Have a good weekend.